Hello, and welcome to Frankenstein's RPG Podcast, Series 4, Episode 1. Series 4. In this podcast series, what we're looking at doing is fleshing out the liminal campaign. And in this very first one, it's a little bit free form. We're trying to sort of set a few ground rules, but also things that inform the campaign, the flow, and make sure that we've got something that doesn't feel like it's railroady or perhaps even too episodic. The podcast now has a Patreon. Please do go and find us there if you could support us at all. It'd be great. It costs a fair bit of money, hosting, editing and the like. So we do have a Patreon, and there'll be a few fringe benefits too, which hopefully in the future you may well be listening to some of our Patreons on the pod. The last thing is to remember, you know, this is all about bringing people together and trying to find some way of making something creative, a bit fun, not meant to be taken particularly seriously. So keep the Twitter rants to an absolute minimum, please. I hope you enjoy it, and join me, Martin, Ralph, Nook, and Paul Michener, he of the liminal game, as we get to grips with Series 4, Episode 1, How can we actually build it? Blimey.
Hello, hello.
Oh, hello.
Are you okay?
I'm not too bad. I'm not too bad. How are you? Are you well?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm okay. Slightly less hairy than I used to be.
Yes. Yeah, but that's a fashion statement nowadays, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not quite the fashion statement that I would have liked to have made, but, you know.
But, you know, it's you rock what you got.
Exactly. In the post, I got a little bit distracted. Actually, I was supposed to be doing some.
I've just been handed a piece of paper.
Okay. Ooh, yeah.
The Blessed and the Blamed. This from the company Sons of the Singularity, and they make beautiful. I think this is the other part of it, which is a box set.
Yeah.
And in that box set, lots of goodies, including a GM screen. Which I'm on record as saying I like GM screen, but it's fantastic. It's a campaign set in Morocco and Algeria just before the Second World War. So lots of.
So you're going to be doing you're going to do Casablanca, are you?
And Fez, yeah. Imagine the costumes. Come on, yeah. It looks absolutely beautiful. They did another one, which was Journal d'Indochine, which is all pre-Vietnam War, pre the French the French sort of withdrawing from Vietnam, which is pretty. The idea tonight is just really to recap on that first session that we had. Which was the bit about setting in London. And we kind of nicked about two or three different little bits from others. Obviously, Nook, yours was the principal driving force behind. Yeah. We're going to be doing the Great North Road campaign.
Okay.
And then obviously we had a Dr. Mitch's Corner subsequent to that where we discussed it. But the bits that I'd be quite keen to sort of do today is really just to say, okay, well, which bits work? Which bits don't. But the idea behind it is to just to go back over it. Is there anything we want to change? Is there any bits? And then to start saying, okay, well, what do we really need to map out? So which bits need to be sort of explained? Which bits need to be fleshed out? You know, are we happy with the basic premise? And then we'll crack on from there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Be a bit freeform. And if anybody wants to volunteer for, oh, yeah, I fancy messing around with that bit and I'd do some of that, then you're more than welcome to. Otherwise, I'll be doing it, which will be fun.
Well, we wouldn't want to steal your thunder, Dave.
Yeah, this is you. This is you. You need to assign work to people.
Oh, okay. I'm deadly serious, by the way. If we do raise the £1 million that I'm targeting from this, it's going to be, you know, it'll be a community. But I've no issues with spreading it around to everybody. So yeah, free league type sums of cash ahoy.
You could fund Grogmeat for many years.
Okay, so welcome everybody. Series 4.
I thought it was 3.2
or 3.5.
Yeah.
Edition 3.5 Path podcast, or whatever it might be, with a schism from episode 3. Well, we've kind of got the bones of what we're trying to do with this, with the last series, and then with this one, we're just going to flesh it out a bit more, which is that we're going to try and write a campaign for Liminal. Very, very kindly, Paul Michener, whose voice you may hear very shortly, has allowed us to get involved in trying to ruin his game, which is only right, really. It's far too good. It needs bringing down a peg or two. Anyway. And after a brief sort of hiatus, we're coming back with series 4. This is episode 1, and our contributors this evening, we are potentially waiting for one more, but our contributors this evening, if I could ask you just to introduce yourself and perhaps give a brief reason as to why it is you've decided to subscribe to this madness. If I could start with, in true Celebrity Squares fashion, top left for me, which is Nook.
All right. Okay. So I was going to get my social media all lined up, but I haven't done it. So I'm Nook Harper. I'm not really on Twitter anymore. Who is? I'm on Blue Sky. I think I'm called Nook Cabra on that. We'll check later. I'm also on Instagram as Games Explosion, but spelt like on Primal Screen. And if you ever want to find me, I'm in Bolton running Dre Games at Headspace every Monday.
Yep. Which is good, which is going well.
It is. It's going great guns. Just finished my first D&D campaign, and I'm going to burn my books, never run it again. And I'm moving on to the One Ring.
Oh,
excellent.
Just to annoy Tamkin.
Yeah.
All the starting characters, I can confirm, are hobbits. Filthy hobbits.
Which is what Professor Tolkien would have liked.
Yes.
Good. Thank you. Martin.
Well, I'm Martin. Like most of us aren't now, no longer really on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. I'm on Blue Sky of That Martin. Why am I on this podcast? I don't know. It's because Dave asked me. He's an idiot. He asked me. So I thought I'd come and join the lunacy. Seems fair enough.
Yeah. No, very good. I am an idiot. You're absolutely right. Ralph.
Oh, hi, I'm Ralph Lovegrove. I have done quite a few episodes of the Fitch Pleasant podcast over the last few years, but it's currently on hiatus, and I do other role-playing projects and various things. And I guess I'm here for my charm and good looks, because there's no other reason that anyone would want me on the podcast.
Visually, people won't be able to see it. Although at some stage, do you know, I might stick the video up somewhere just to show how obscenely handsome we all are.
I've shined my head for the occasion.
We are sort of we've kind of got like a Mitchell Brothers look going.
Well, you say that actually. I was in the post office picking up delivery office picking up post, and some person told me I looked just like Phil Mitchell, which was a bit of a surprise, really. I didn't properly understand, because I'm not a big EastEnders fan anymore.
No, given that Grant's the handsome one as well, I would say
that. Yes, I mean, that was very nice. Wasn't Grant supposedly a hard man who went on to do I'm doing hard man things in various parts of the world thing?
Yeah, he does World's Most Dangerous Gangs or things like that. I was actually thinking, if you do put the video up, this is a most unusual crew for an RPG podcast. All of us are clean shaven, pretty much.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
You're a bit stubbly, but not especially.
I can't groom a beard at the minute, but yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't really have that option anyway.
Two weeks ago, I had a long grey beard.
I thought you'd say it's really impressive. It's all middle-aged white men.
Yeah.
I thought yours was retractable, Paul. I mean, it's where you just, by force of will, you draw it back into your chin as needed, and then...
You've exposed my secret superpower.
You use it to smite your enemies.
Your superpower being looking like Gandalf?
Yeah, or not like Gandalf.
Okay.
With a Radagast kind of vibe.
It depends whether it's washed that week.
Clearly, the wizard of games manufacturer, but could you introduce yourself, please, Gandalf?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Paul Michener. Dave's invited me here, clearly, out of a misplaced sense of politeness. you can find me on Blue Sky as the Tweedmeister, or I'm on Dr. Mitch on various Discords.
Oh, yeah, Discord. I'm not sure about Discord, you know. I can't quite get used to how it works, but I'm sure it's the next big thing.
My kids love it.
Do they?
Is it
a young person thing? Okay.
Yeah, we're obviously too old, Dave.
It's for the kids.
Been said before. Right, but you have to,
we're
you have
old
to forgive
we're old and we like threading and things like that.
So, I'm thinking, Dave, when are we going to do this, a TikTok?
Or maybe a Snapchat?
Snapchat's past it now.
Don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Don't know what it is.
Facebook.
Right. Facebook. Yeah. I've got a MySpace page up now. Is that Friends Reunited, maybe? After that sort of zhush around the social media platforms that have been absolutely rubbish previously and then now. Okay, so just to give some context. I am conscious that what I don't want to do, I want there to be some element of mystery still for people who eventually get their hands on this, you know, this insane idea that we're actually going to have a physical book, however, sometimes hopefully we will do. So I'm sort of going to precy bits and pieces of the sort of underpinnings of the campaign. So I've shared this with everybody. I've kind of tried to be a bit more prescriptive about where we're coming from, and hopefully that will sort of inform how the campaign sort of unfolds. But essentially, how did it all begin? I'm not going to read the whole of this because there's several pages there. However, what have we got? So the underpinnings are that there's always been, and feel free to jump in if anybody wishes to and say that sounds rubbish. Not yet. Let me actually say something. There's always been a link between the sort of mundane royal rulers in the British Isles and the fae and mythic and liminal worlds. Indeed, often not only alliances, but intermarriage. It started with William the Conqueror. And this will be the bit that goes under the heading of the things the GM needs to know. Okay. And it goes through several iterations from William through to James the First and Six, which is the bit where we kind of come in. Now, in sort of real life, what happened was James accedes to the throne. Succeeds. He becomes a king of England as well as Scotland. And he, in history, he genuinely does make a procession from Edinburgh down to London for his coronation. And he genuinely does stop at a number of the places where we have picked up various sorts of scenario sort of locations. So the idea was, and it was an absolutely brilliant idea, although when he did say it should be the Great North Road, the A1, I think everybody on the podcast sort of looked at him like he was mad. But it does hang together really, really nicely. And James the First and Sixth is in Scotland, a rabid anti-Liminal faction. But he realizes when he comes down into to take over the throne, he realizes that there's a number of rights that have been established with the Fey and Liminal world that will help him. And he then has to reiterate some of these sort of promises and treaties that have all been put in place before by previous rulers and with various factions within the Liminal world along this route from Edinburgh down to London. So that's the sort of the synopsis bit of it. And I don't have any issues with the way that's, and I'm hoping that nobody else has any issues with the way that sort of the setting is. What we then
have issues, it's my idea, but I was listening back to episode one, and what is amazingly apparent to me is that I was winging it. It was an idea I had in like the toilet before we started recording. So I was seeing, like, you know, what would I have done differently? You know, the folly of youth, let's revisit this, because it was over a year ago, wasn't it? It was February last year.
Yeah.
So I was looking back and thinking, what would I do differently? And I was thinking about, you know, what I wanted to articulate, which I don't think I did, because I was basically just pulling stuff out of my ass, was that having sort of these trade agreements and agreement and kind of like courtly ties all sounds very nice and British, but the A1, the Great North Road, it's a Roman road. And the Romans were invaders. And the Romans came in at the height of what we'll call the Bronze Age. And reading through Liminal, I'm reminded that the Fey are not weak to iron, as they are in most mythologies and games. They're weak to bronze. I was thinking, well, if you've got an invading force, it's going to have its own mythic traditions. Obviously, some Ars Magica stuff coming in here, in Order of Hermes kind of thing. But you've got an invading force with its own mythic traditions. And what it's got to fettle the population, both mundane and sublime. How are you going to do that? One way is to basically build a giant bronze rod up the entire back of England that is going to be some form of control mechanism. So I just wanted to add something to it that basically made it less fluffy, less nice, less optional, and more coming back in, there was the question, like, are we the baddies? In episode one, I think it was Martin saying, are we the baddies? And so yes, we're actually going to be implementing a method of control, which is arguably a really horrible thing to do to the supernatural population of England, that whoever is in control of England, maybe the Ravens, maybe the King of England, maybe one of the Wizardly Orders, maybe some shadowy corporation, maybe they are actually in the right, and maybe this ritual should be broken. So the act of going up the Great North Road isn't just some rite of passage, isn't just like a friendly, let's go out and touch base with people along the way. It's also, unbeknownst to the characters as they're doing it, they're actually reinforcing a two millennia old method of control, laying it down across the length of England, which doesn't detract from the mythology you just laid out, because that actually happened like 1600 years later.
Yeah.
But we can still add in, but then we can also throw in the ghosts of the people who built it, who are enslaved to its kind of like ley line power. We can throw in all this kind of there's all the way up the old Great North Road, there's loads of Roman digs and archaeological sites. You can just throw in lots of kind of Bronze Age kind of centurions. If you go on a ghost walk in York, there's loads of kind of Roman centurion legions marching through wherever you want to go. Let's put all that in.
So I'm just wondering how you'd mechanically sort of do that alongside.
Can I make an annoying point, which is it's Iron Age rather than Bronze Age.
That is annoying, Paul. I'm just going to strike you from the record. You have no authority here.
Can I ask a practical question in terms of, because of course you Dave, you just said mechanistic. I'm also thinking in terms of the flow of the actual story and the pace and everything and the reason for everything happening. So let's say that you have the, let's say that at some point the characters have the opportunity to not reinforce this action or choose not to. What are the consequences of that? And what are the consequences of them sort of just saying we're going to be part of the status quo, or the consequences on them saying we're going to rebel against it? Does it actually change anything? And I think this is important because in any campaign, you want to make sure the players feel their characters have meaning and agency. And so if this is just sort of saying, well, 2,000 years ago, some people did some terrible things to Britain, and we walk the line, people have been coerced to walk the line to reinforce that subjugation, I'm going to say, well, if we stop doing it, what would happen? And would that be an overnight change? Would that be a victory that the party could see? So that would be my question about that. I'm not questioning the premise. How big a point of the plot does it need to be?
It's quite interesting because if you remember, one of the suggestions that was in that first episode was Martin's switching off the ley lines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So something was switching off the ley lines, and you wonder whether actually might that be a way of sort of saying, okay, actually the ley lines aren't that, they are some sort of bronze bit. But the other bit that I hadn't sort of come on to say was, you have the Arthur D, who is this wrong son of John D, who sets up this sort of, or grows this huge sort of shadowy entity. But they're actually the recruiters of the party who start off in the campaign. Is it enough? I thought that was the bit that was going to be the, hang on a second, are we the baddies? Mm-hmm. Because they originally they're put there because they're the less competent of two teams who are supposed to, you know, maybe mess this all up, and that's the bit that I'm just wondering how you'd get overcome that bit of
any method of control, be it just general laws or like, you know, that we exist in a civilized society, or we're not just talking like extremes like fascistic or hippies. So any method of governance, control, and civilization has some level of unfairness where a choice has to be made. So I think Ralph's point of like, what is the consequence of this? It's a brilliant question. And it's absolutely on the nose. It's so, what is the change? So does the corporation take over? Is there chaos, which the corporation then wants to capitalize upon? Is there an opportunity for the status quo to be, the void to be filled in a succession war? Paul?
No, I was just thinking, riffing off your idea just now, and also what Ralph said, what we can do is we have the idea, I think, that somehow this route is damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And the player characters could either repair it or totally destroy it. If they follow the D Corporation sort of default line, as it were, and don't look into who's hiring them, they've not just restored it, but they've given control somehow to the D Corporation, to this Arthur D.
Mm-hmm.
So you've almost got, I think they've got a choice of sign of the status quo, giving the control sort of effectively back to the sort of ceremonial state of the UK, you know, following James the First or Sixth, breaking it entirely, or naively it goes to the D Corporation. So there's a choice there in what they're doing if they find out everything that's going on. But I think going through the individual things along the line, that will give them the choice of basically repair or breaking.
So in the same way that the D Corporation are essentially the sponsors of blow it up, who's the sort of sponsors of no repair?
Well, I think that's the point. They're not the sponsors of blow it up. They're trying to take control of it. They don't want to blow this up. They want control to pass from, you know, the ceremonies laid down from the royal family, which is kind of running on autopilot almost,
yeah,
to them. where they will exert more rights and more control. We need to work out what that means. Yeah, I can see it being nothing good.
Well, I think what I'd like to understand, and it goes back to my question about sort of agency and everything. I think the idea of having a staged journey with something to achieve on along each step of the way, and a decision about sort of do we reinforce this or do we actually shut it down at each step, that works really nicely in an episodic form. In an episodic form, that's what I meant to say. There were teeth in. What I'd like to understand then is that there should be one set of beneficiaries who benefit from shutting down and one who benefit from re-establishing the status quo. And it should be shades of grey, that neither of those would be good people. And I think the important thing for the agency is that those people can be identified, and I guess their motives will be reflected in the NPCs that the characters meet along the way, and that will help them understand what everyone's stakes are in that. So I think the premise is sound. I just wouldn't want to lose sight of what the players are going to experience.
I completely agree with Ralph, but I'm wondering if we should have three options. So the middle path, which is current status quo as things are, repair it correctly, perform the ritual as prescribed. You have one which is maybe the D corporation, which is benevolent dictatorship. So things you'll lose a certain amount of freedom, but arguably the buses will run on time. And then we can have total and utter chaos, which is at the top end. The Winter King says, no, don't lay that final stone. Let me take over England and we'll have like some war and we'll regain stuff. So the players can
have freedom.
But it's a chaos. What we're talking about, are we reverting back to what the states were before the Romans came? So people start to wrote, it sort of reverts back to some kind of kingdoms. The Fae are now free. Everybody, there is a lot more. Basically, you have the option of bringing magic back into the world,
mm-hmm.
but that will have consequences, which you may not like. So there will be more. There will be more power. You can do more.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think
there could be a chance that you become enslaved to the Fae world.
Well, to answer that directly, and building on this, the episodic nature, because I think you've just very, very succinctly identified the two actors, the two forces that are interested parties, and three courses of action that might have at each stage. Depending on what they do at each stage, can that be reflected in the events and the people they see further on later in the session, later in the game? I don't know if you've played Dishonored or other, mm-hmm. games like that, which have a supposedly dynamically evolving world. I mean, Dishonored goes between law and chaos, and the more chaos you see, then the more rats and the more violence and the slightly different responses from the NPCs. And of course that is kind of a bit of a blunt instrument, and it's also a video game. But I'm thinking that sort of thing, is there a doom counter? Is there a needle that swings towards one way or the other? And most importantly, if it's swinging in one direction or the other, it can't just be an arbitrary thing that the players say, oh, I'm worried about the needle swung over there, when it doesn't actually do anything in the campaign. So what happens in the later stages? Who comes out of the woodwork? Who is emboldened by both sides? You know, so you say you've got, so the D Corporation are your sort of new conservatives, and they are sort of a revolting establishment who, if they're given more power, will become ever more brazen in their grabs for power and their authoritarianism. Let's say you swing towards the Winter King. Does that mean that weirder stuff happens and pierces the veil between what is Fae and what is the normal world, and can those effects, in either case, be seen in the places that the characters go to? I mean, you're talking about a timescale of 28 days, so I'm not sure, but I mean, you want some statements about what happens, and maybe at each stage you have people who would be triggered, NPCs who have triggered for one course of action or another, depending on what happens earlier. That's a mechanical thought there.
It's like the idea of reputation.
Quite,
reputation and faction. Yeah. So as you progress up the road, depending how your reputation swung one way or another, you may find the NPCs react to you in different ways or other ones. So some may decide to help you, some may decide to try and kill you or hinder you.
I'm thinking also that it's not just sort of the way they react to you. Let's say in one world where people go up the road and they decide to strengthen it for the Winter King, then what they get is a sort of more supernatural influence further up, as you go further north, which means that the actual ability of some NPCs, the aspect and the power, is increased, and you could have, let's say, you have every single location is on something of a knife edge politically, and you swing it in terms of one way or the other, and that dictates the response you get, but it also dictates the conditions that the ordinary people, so to speak, will find themselves in when the characters arrive. Mm. Anyway, that's my thought. I'm going to sort of now shut up and.
It's very much like decision points along the way, isn't it? So like a set point on the road, you have to make a decision. Like I said, basically, like Clementine will remember this in The Walking Dead. But we're also looking then, so Roots, the RPG, has quite a complex faction system. And there's the faction system within Blades in the Dark, which sort of says that every single faction is progressing its own interests as it goes on.
Yeah.
But then, so I've not read it, but I've played a few sessions of it. Of Rise of the Rune Lords in Pathfinder. So I have no idea what was going on, but I know we reached a decision point, and my GM went, oh, right. And he made a note in a column, and he said, there's a rune point. But didn't tell us what the hell it meant, what it was going, but basically, clearly, we'd made a decision, and that was something that was going to affect the future. And it scared the life out of me. So if there's any way to capture that, that would be great. In fact, players don't even need to know that there's a choice to be made until they have made the choice. No. And then the GM goes, oh, well, I'll remember that.
Yeah. There isn't, Paul, any sort of mechanic within the game that we could draw out on, is there?
Yes, there is. There's a sort of factions mechanic similar to Blades in the Dark.
Yeah.
Whereby after any adventure, you track any factions about those. So before, you set up which factions are in play. And then after that, it's basically after any adventure, you track any factions. Oh, are they happy with you? Are they annoyed with you? And that's relationships going up and down. So you could easily just tweak that to saying, okay, just have the two things, you know, decorporation, status quo and freedom, and just put ticks there to see it depending on what they've done.
Yeah.
See how it was ahead at the end,
but we do. You could really complicate it because there is quite a few other factions that have been put forward in there, not just FCMC, but we've got Ordnance Survey, the French Fae Court,
and I think that would be a really fun thing to have. Actually, we've mentioned the name ones. It might be suddenly out of nowhere. You've given control of the country to the French Fae Court, unwittingly.
Yeah, or the Ordnance Survey.
Yes,
we've all been turned into anorak wearing lunatics. The Yorkshire Liberation Army is another one that we've got in there. The Barber Group, who came out of the Hunt, the Cambridgeshire Hunt, wasn't it?
Well, I think it's coming to the thing that was hinted at, I think, by Martin, where we're talking about not just the magic coming back and things potentially if there's maximum freedom option, but also the country sort of crumbling into lots of, eventually into lots of petty kingdoms, you know, sort of dark storm, full dark age or pre-Roman.
I am 100% for the return of Elmet.
Well, yeah, you support the New Yorkshire Liberation Army, right?
100%.
Can I just have a quick sense check? Are we still saying it's like over 28 days?
I think
this is long-term consequences of the decisions made over those.
Yeah, which is my point.
Not necessarily seen in play.
My point is like sort of the long-term consequences happen at the end of the adventure when some other buggers have to pick up the consequences then, which, I mean, it's like it's an interesting narrative thing, but it won't affect the game as it goes on through the time. So the time frame for this journey is it a lunar cycle?
Yeah, that was the original idea.
I think what we originally sort of came to the decision on was that nominally it has to be completed within a month, a 28-day cycle, yeah.
Yeah.
However,
on foot,
what we were going to try and do was to draw out some of the other mechanics in the game to make them become more important. So the idea of chronomancy, for example, and that was one of the things that was going to come on to, which was to say, and also then, you know, other mechanics like slipping into the Fey world and going through the, like the Goblin Market, for example, where time becomes a bit more flexible, which then gives the GM the opportunity not to be tied to 28 days. You know, you spent a week and a half trying to convince whatever it might be, Little Miss Muffet, to not, you know, enslave the whole of South Mimms. And instead, you know, we take you back in time through Newcastle at the Goblin Market, and you come out the other side back in Newark a week and a half before. And also the idea would have been, and it might be quite a nice way of doing it, is, what if, as you said about agency, the desired outcome from one of the particular episodes, they do, in quotation marks, the wrong thing, they have an opportunity to go back and try and fix it then, maybe. So I think, yes, the timeline is, it still needs to be a lunar month where it's 28 days, but we need to build in their mechanics whereby people can go back and do something else.
I think it also makes it a bit more fun. That sounds fine. You've still got an objective time frame, which is a month. Yeah. And so my question is then, as the characters move, and if you have things changing as they go further north, is there time for that change to happen? So here's a really wacky idea. Let's say that you are messing around with the ritual and either doing it or doing it. You know, you've got three states of the ritual. You don't only reinforce the road. You actually divert the timeline onto something that is closer to chaos or closer to law. That's say for an argument. So. And you reflect that in the landscape and the people and the events which they see further on. So let's say that there's a sort of if the characters have chosen law twice, chosen to reinforce the D corporation twice, by the third event, the world that they see should actually be. It is actually veering towards a particular status quo and maybe even challenging their memories. And that could be something you can continually bear in mind, even if you have time travel, because what you then do is all you've got is you've got a dial that you've moved one way or the other. And that informs the features that come out at each stage, so people can then go back in time and say, actually, this isn't what I remember the first time round. It was much more chaotic. It wasn't nearly as authoritarian as I remember it now. So that might be a way of implementing it in a fairly simple way. Because, I mean, Paul, I got what you said about the factions being how they respond to the PCs. What I'm thinking more about as well is the environment and the feel of the whole place as well.
I like this a lot. I like the idea that you can see, sort of feel the changes coming along. Yeah. And again, going back with Dave's point that there's a possibility of changing things.
Because
and think, uh-oh, I don't like the way this is going. What's going on there?
Because the reason
I was just going to say what please, you could do is you could use something like if the idea is that the liminal world or the Fey world perhaps as a faction want things to revert to as you said, Martin, they want things to revert to how it was pre-Roman, then maybe it's things like technology starts to fail.
Electric
cars no longer work.
Could you have, what if, and this is massively out of the, what I understand the power levels of Chronomancy to be, but if the players go up and basically make every single wrong decision they can possibly make and they get to the end of the road and everything's just foobard, do they get a do-over when they have to go back and actually stop themselves from assassinating Hitler? stop themselves from making the wrong decision. Can they go back and do that? Could that be an option at the end of the campaign?
Yeah, I think so. The finale of the campaign was in Edinburgh, wasn't it? Well, yes. I guess the answer to that might be yes. Why would we not, give the chance to go back and say, "Oops,
yes.
The Britney Spears moment."
Oops, so the question about time travel then. What do the party have to give up by going back in time? Because there has to be because if it costs them nothing, then why not just do it over and over and
They'd
over?
They'd have to strike a massive bargain with the Fey court, wouldn't they? They'd have to, because the Fey would want everything from them. Because that's kind of like time and reality distortion is it's Fey or mage. So if you go to a mage, the mage would probably want something quite substantially material, whereas the Fae would basically want everything. They want like your memories. One of the parts, you would have to make an ultimate sacrifice at the very least.
I think that's a more interesting way of doing it. Actually, you almost have that, as you were saying, Ralph, about who's involved. It is almost okay. Well, which faction now can help you, and what do they want to get out of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think having sort of the costs and the what can be offered as a sort of a cheat sheet for the GM might be a good idea, because then people the GM wouldn't be caught on the back foot when the players say, "Oh, I want to go back in time," and they could say, "Well, I've got a whole list of suggestions in this appendix to say if the players say we want to go back in time, here's what it will cost. So, and here's how they might achieve it."
I don't think it going back in time is going to be remotely automatic. I mean, it's there, with the whole business of the Fey Courts. I spent a night there. 100 years has passed. It's got a device for certain types of stories. It doesn't mean anything that the player characters could remotely control.
Can I throw in one sort of tangential thought while I remember it? So, Dave, related to the thing you said about sort of, let's say, the Fey gaining aspect as the characters go on. So as they go on, you get to a world where technology gets less and less reliable.
Yeah.
And maybe even the technology you see becomes grubbier and less useful. Maybe it's 2024, but everybody is using Nokia dumb phones and they're driving around Morris Minors or something like that, because technology has actually been suppressed and the characters are the only people who see that. So if you go the other way, and let's say the D Corporation become stronger, what I would like to see is billboard advertising. I would like to see a sort of a PR campaign and them in the public sphere and actually saying, them endorsing all sorts of products and becoming turning into a much more consumerist. Yeah, exactly. Right on.
Yeah.
They live. Yeah, quite right.
Can I?
Anyway, that was the thought I wanted to minute.
That's it. Yeah. I'm thinking that there's two ways you could do this broadly, and that depends on the intent of the book and the intent of the group who are playing it.
Yeah.
Which is this going to be an ongoing campaign? You run the introductory adventure, the Great North Road, and then you deal with the consequences and you play through it. Or is it going to be a one shot? So if it's an ongoing campaign, then you have the slow decay and they can see the consequences of their actions unfold as they play through it.
Yeah.
And if it's going to be a one shot, then it's, as we just said, you have the big bang, you have the big fight, them hard choices, ultimate sacrifices, battles on top of the Death Star, that kind of thing. And then, so we'd have to put both in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would need to be phrased. So it would need to be written in such a way as, and again, the original intention was you could potentially have just a new batch of scenarios to play through.
Yeah.
That happened to be put in different parts of the UK. And each of those scenarios do. So one of the purposes of this sort of series of podcasts is, okay, we kind of know what happens in each of the scenarios. We've got a sort of a micro. So in London, we've got resolution of the Fae Court. We've got to put a spirit to rest. We've got issues around Spitalfields. You could just do that. That's a scenario. Fantastic. If you want the full campaign experience, then these are all the bits that sit in the background. So this first episode is about saying, okay, I think this is absolutely fantastic. You know, what is the, to run as a campaign, how do you build a mechanic that makes it firstly all connected? And then secondly, what happens as you progress through the campaign? Yeah.
I had a thought about that. This is a leading question. See what I did there? Yeah. Which is, I was thinking about the layout of the book. So one of my original suggestions, listening back to Series 3, Episode 1, one of the things that you said, no, that probably wouldn't work. But I want to point out that we did this anyway, which is, I suggest we have basically just like a sandbox adventure where you basically define going on. So no, we actually have set points. I think the layout of the book should be the Great North Road as a setting where we take every single idea that's been presented in the podcast and put that as a story seed, or we get the people who presented it to write up that individual one.
Yeah.
So the winning ones are the ones that would form the adventure. So you'd have section one of the book would be the Great North Road as a setting. So you can just play it and you have locations and you have factions and you have NPCs and you have things you can interact with.
Yep.
And then section two is the adventure, which has the start to finish, the reason, the consequences, everything we've just discussed now, the milestones, the choices, the set decision points. And then section three is how do you end it? Which is massively important because I'm shit at endings. So any book I get needs to have endings in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think physically, I absolutely agree about all the other suggestions being in there as the sort of the adventure. I can't think what is it you call them?
Story seeds.
Pardon?
Story seeds, I think I said.
Yeah.
Okay, story seeds. Yeah. And then you have the campaign, and then you have the, you know, actually this is the thing that brings it all together as a campaign, if you like. Mm-hmm. You know, not just six or eight, whatever it is, linked stories. Okay. So everybody's got to write up their, at least their story seed. That's a piece of work for everyone to do.
Shit.
What have you done, Luke? You've given everybody work. You're going to get lynched at the next event.
This is your homework, everybody. I shall be marking. Could I possibly ask at least two of you, maybe it's Ralph and Nook, to have a look at this idea of, you know, that consequences of what happens if Sure. And then just a few sort of ideas about, and then maybe bounce it between ourselves. Okay, so what happens? What's the benefit of shutting down, not doing the treaty? What's the benefit, or what occurs if you do reinforce it? And then the last bit, which is what happens if somebody else takes control of it, and who it is. And then I guess the only other thing is probably need a bit of your input, Paul, and I'm happy to do it, is how are each of the factions involved across the whole sort of story? You know, which factions are the ones that really could make a big impact?
Yeah,
does that make sense?
What the official the things like the Ordnance Survey and things like that, you mean, or the Paul Lim?
Yeah, well, we've got the Ravens Tower were mentioned quite a bit. We've also got the other factions like Gog and Magog, if you remember, the part-time giants.
I remember part-time giants.
Yeah. And it's sort of, how do they benefit? Obviously, the there'll be things like the Winter King, the Queen of Hyde Park. Even in the first instance, I think it's the, is it Queen Rat? What's her name?
Yes. Yeah, she's involved, isn't she? Yeah.
She is. How do they benefit? Okay. So maybe we can do that. If I could ask, I'll send out your notes and homework after the episode as it goes out, and then we'll try and draw it together. And then by the time we sort of get through, we'll be able to say, okay, right, what happens? So this bit is all about what happens in the campaign. How do we make it work? I think one thing that does need fleshing out, and I think, was it you who came up with it anyway, Martin, which is FCMC?
Yeah, I was going to work out how that hangs together and the backstory behind it. I've got a very loose backstory, but how, so you're probably introducing... Well, it could be the oppositional faction, or it could be the faction you're working for. You've got plenty of options there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I was thinking, as we're putting this down a road, and it seems like, I'm wondering if there's stuff we can play with around magical roads as they progress along. Maybe they can see the scenery outside start to change, and as things start to swing, this is what gives you. So you're almost taken out of time.
That'd be an interesting way of doing it. Well, as you're literally progressing along the road.
Yeah.
This is to Ralph's point about things might well change.
Yeah, things might well change.
Okay. How do we progress along the road? This is becoming horribly philosophical now, isn't it?
Yeah.
How have we advanced as a species in this campaign? Okay. Well, if I can ask you then to have a think about that. Mm. So the Arthur D bit, the FCMC,
yeah.
I mean, excuse me, the background is sort of there, but having been informed by other bits and pieces on there. Okay, so there'll be a little bit of a musical interlude here. One thing I was going to say is... What do we sort of need to do in terms of the party itself? Because do we need to be as specific as saying, right, this is what the party looks like? How do we work with what must-haves do we have to have at the start of the campaign as far as the party is concerned?
Are you saying should we offer pre-gens?
Yeah,
all hobbits.
I would imagine we would offer pre-gens, but I think it's sort of like, do we have to be specific and say, okay, well, there has to be somebody who's a chronomancer in there, for example.
I wouldn't have thought so, but I mean, we'd need to have obviously a party that's interested in doing this.
Yeah.
Well, they're all hobbits employed by the flying squad.
Yeah. Well, the Sweeney, wasn't it?
Oh, no, they're all graduate trainees for the D Corporation.
The interns.
Yeah, they don't actually realise what the hell's going on.
Well, they've been recruited for specific reasons, I think, was the only part of the brief that we had.
Mm.
You know, they're in there. They're the second string. So presumably then, do you sort of mechanically start as five or six or whatever it might be, and then you suddenly discover that you've got these heritages or something. I don't know.
I really like the idea of saying a campaign, we've all done something wrong. You've all offended somebody, or you've committed a crime, or you owe a lot of money or something like that. So basically you have something you've got to pay off. And this is your way, this is your redemption, this is your way out of military service instead of prison, you know? But being an intern or, you know, a graduate or something works just as well. It's about leverage. Someone has leverage over you, and you're doing it not because you want to, but because you have to.
I like that idea of the basically this is your punishment. This is you paying off the debt. I like that idea because it lets you bring in any character.
Mm-hmm. And it could be a part of a character flaw as well, Paul. So could be absolutely. So you could have a character who's got themselves massively in debt for gambling, and they suddenly find and you might throw things in their way which actually tempts them again to fall down that hole. They could find themselves playing cards with the Queen of the Fae or something.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, I agree. Anthony nodding and realised that didn't carry across on the podcast.
That's my yes. Visual medium as we're talking about.
Okay, so they've got to have as a flaw some reason for having been recruited into this party. Is that right?
It's something like that. I think so. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to directly connect. You know, it's just something like, I don't know, was it Nuke? Was it you, Martin, saying there's some leverage over them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They slept with a boss's daughter or something.
The original idea back in the day, like that 14 months ago, was that they all had a geese or whatever it is over them.
Yeah.
This is essentially it. So to repay the debt, you have this geese put on you. So whatever they did before is immaterial, just a reason to be there.
Yep. This might well be one thing that informs what they want to get out of it. So if they're indebted to the Fae Queen, they might want to have a slightly different agenda to somebody who is indebted to the Raven's Tower or something. Okay.
Well, that's a really good idea. Because if we have different agenda as well, so this means you can feed in. So it's not just they're going on and giving this job and then people are pulling them different ways. Actually, you have moles in the party who are actively going to try and sabotage or reinforce, depending on what their agenda is, depending on what they want to get from it, depending who they offended or they owe the debt to.
Okay. Sorry, we were sort of talking about this before we started, but it's interesting in this Cthulhu. And also it happens in Alien, although I think it would be a bit, I'm thinking about, you know, PC agendas. The one thing I must admit I'm not too keen on is having that sort of opportunity for people who are a bit,
I think,
you know, we want inter-party conflict. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think we're going PvP with it. I think the idea is, because you've got these other things coming into play, you might have the idea, oh no, we need to do, one player saying, oh no, we need to do this. There's at least discussion and a bit less predictability about it. You know, it makes outcomes unpredictable. But yeah, I agree. Yeah. I don't think it really necessarily suits PvP.
Criminal isn't really a PvP game, is it?
No.
I was going to say that's probably not. It's quite interesting where in this is Sons of Singularity, they do these series of Call of Cthulhu things. Each of the characters, and they're usually they're pre-gens, has a sort of like an agenda, or at least a background that marks them out as being slightly sort of either touched or different or whatever. And also in Maelstrom Doomsday, which I'm currently running, which is great fun. You've witnessed some sort of supernatural event which has made you into the sort of, being sensitive to the maelstrom and being part of the adventure party. So it's not without precedent. I think that'd be quite a nice way of having, you know, there is something that you're indebted to, whether it's FCMC, but it's something that FCMC could potentially exploit, I guess.
Yeah.
Or they've somehow bought your debt.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Good. Okay, like that. So not going to specify what the PCs are. I did put in there as a question mark, you know, do the PCs start knowing what their own talents and skills are?
I think so.
Yeah, I think
I mean, one thing I'm a bit cautious of is we don't want to necessarily, how shall I put it, to put too many different things into the mixture just because we're thinking it's cool. Don't get me wrong, that's part of the idea of it and the fun of the Frankenstein thing. At the same time, now we're thinking about seriously writing it up. Yeah. That makes it, everything like that makes it more complicated to do.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing. And also at the moment, I'm running Masks of Neil Athetep, and trying to balance all that in your head is, at times, is a bit daunting.
It's a complicated beast to run, especially some locations. Some locations are relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
Others, it just, the complexity piles up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that has come out of playing another few games, coming back into role-playing again, is I think this idea of having agendas and also it not being a sort of a fairly linear progression in terms of the campaign. To your point, Ralph, about, you know, trying to give agency back to the players, actually, the more you can put in their court, well, you sort of have this agenda. And also, you know, you're going to be making decisions that is going to affect the way the campaign runs. It may not end up the way that it was written or intended to be played through, but your decision, and I think handing back stuff to the players as much as possible is going to be quite important. You know, well, this is the task. How you go about it now, you guys have got to decide it. So
for sure, could be quite absolutely,
good. That's good. It's answered the other question that I had, which is, does each PC start with an agenda? And the answer to that is, to an extent, yes, they do, which is either this indebtedness or whatever, which is great. We had the fact that this is all sort of hemmed around in ritual and history and legend and so on. Do the PC crew, the actual players, do they have like a group name? I mean, not they're the X-Men, but because it's sort of, you know, I think there were a couple of bits that were sort of, one was Heralds of the Change, was a phrase that came out. Another one was Bearers of the Treaty or Bearers of the Covenant. Do we define it
themselves? But it should carry formal weight. So the tradition is that people, a crew, perform this task every X generations or years or whatever, and they are formally
changing monarch,
announced at each faction they enter with formal heraldry. So if they turn up and says, "We want to be called the Noisy Boys," then some guy with a trumpet suddenly says, "I present to you with great heraldry and pomp and expertise, the Noisy Boys from London."
Yes.
I don't see the D Corporation, the way they've been described, giving them a name.
Hmm. They can come up with their own identity, their own crew name. They call themselves like the Highways Agency if they want, or whatever they want to call themselves.
They could.
Well, the D would give them a project name, like Project Tangerine or something, wouldn't it? It'd be something.
Oh, yeah. 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 Accurate. So, yeah.
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 Like Sweeney. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Random table.
Good. Roll on the table. Yeah.
Have a random table. So that is going to be your project name for it.
Yeah. Random table.
All critical random hit, table.
Well, everybody needs
it. Column A, take color. Column B, fruit or vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
Like it. Okay. So if you just going back to the original episode when we sort of started. We came out of it with a number of other sorts of scopes and everything else. Happy that we're going to be doing, I think there's seven, potentially eight episodes. About right? Or do we think we need to maybe knock that back? Is that too many, the chapters?
Well, we were tying it into physical locations, weren't we? Because that, I think, was it Ralph made the point that like there were too many stop-offs. We need to basically just have it down to kind of like some very simple, like succinct groupings.
Yeah.
So we talked about old kingdoms like Mercia and then Elmet and then Northumbria and then Scotland.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess we can maybe sort of start to make that decision then. As I'm saying this, I'm thinking, let's get it down on paper first and then review.
I think you just have to work out what your beats are.
Yep.
And how many beats you want. And yeah, we might have things. Yeah. So we might, as you said, we could have the story seeds, so we can have those. And if people want to make it longer, they can do so. But you should have certain bits which you've got to hit.
Yeah.
We suggest you hit, and then the rest you can play around with. You can go totally jazz.
Yeah. Okay. So any other things that we need to think about before we, any other things that we haven't sort of addressed about the underpinnings of the campaign or any other themes that we'd want to develop? Because, I mean, there's already a lot there. Is there anything else we might need to be thinking about as a sort of an overarching
there's
theme
something
within the campaign?
I noticed listening back to the podcast, which is that obviously it's full of good ideas, but it's making sure that there's a consistent kind of thematic relation to the previous one that you can draw a line to and it logically connects.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things. It's going to be a fine line between being a little bit railroady and being completely and utterly sandbox or, you know, jazz. I was sort of trying to put who is likely to run a campaign like this? I doubt it'll be the first time that you would play Liminal or GM Liminal, because I think this is going to be quite ambitious. And I'm kind of anticipating that there'll be a split of people who just want to have six or seven adventures that they can run whenever they want to. And I think that's quite important.
I think in terms of linearity, sandboxiness, what we've got is we've got these locations with things going on. That's the side that's fixed. How things are handled in each location, that's what's open. And that's as it should be. Yeah, that's the only way you can do it, to have any sort of freedom in a book.
Yeah.
To be clear, the characters have one thing they must do in each location, right?
Yeah.
And that one thing is a ritual of some sort.
Yeah.
And we haven't decided on the parameters of what they can change in the ritual yet, but we just acknowledge that they have some freedom about how the ritual happens, and that will change the state of play somehow.
Is this going to come down to an Army of Darkness joke where they're going to stand there saying Klaatu Barada and then chaos will erupt, or they can say it correctly and I guess boiling it down to a less ridiculous example would be that there would be a standard ritual they can recite or enact, and they can either add additional stuff which would then strengthen it and have more control, or they can subtract bits which would weaken it and produce more chaos, and it's the choice each time. So maybe they'd have to go to a location, interact with someone, and get the missing element from it.
Or what if they were entrusted with the key ingredients right at the start, and if they were forced to give up some of those, they then are forced to make do or something else, or get replacements, or pursue whoever stole the one piece or whatever, and make a decision about how much of that resource they can spend. So that could be, so they have the seven magical crystals, and that is a currency that can be spent, and it's supposed to be spent on doing the rituals, and maybe there's a bit of a latitude that if you don't have a crystal, it'll probably be fine. But if you know that sort of thing. So and then that becomes a resource that the party have right from the start to decide what to do with and get them into trouble.
I like that. So that's one, that's they've earned 30 seconds in the crystal ritual circle. And two, it's they can then use it to barter, so they can enter a court, exit the fairy kingdom, by bartering the resource, and they can earn it by performing services in other areas as well, couldn't they?
Yeah. Sorry, the Crystal Ritual Circle, is that like a liminal equivalent of the biscuit game or something?
I was thinking something like the Crystal Maze. They're all stuck in something. They have to grab things out of the air, and they count their tokens when they come out, and you'd be like, oh no, you've got a black token, that's it. You've just doomed Britain to...
You gave the wrong Chris. You ignored the Aspidistra or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that's the adventure game.
That is the adventure game. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second series that's a massive teapot? Anyway, sorry. That's the Aspidistra becomes a massive teapot in the later adventure games, which is, you know. Okay, that's probably something for the blooper reel, right? Anyway, that's
get it. Sorry. Welcome to Frankenstein's RPG pod. come for the liminal, stay for the Aspidistra jokes.
We should have someone who talks backwards or something. That's the thing, isn't it?
Right.
Oh, that's it.
And then the vortex at the end.
The vortex, of course.
Which always struck me as terribly unfair.
Yeah. What's the one where you had to hold the cabbages? Oh, no, that was Cracker Jack, wasn't it?
That was one of the incarnations of Crapper Jack. Yeah.
Oh, across the grave.
We're going off tangent now. Then we're going to talk about Basil Rathbone.
Let's try the Tonka.
Right. So that is one of the things that we've got in there. We've got defining the rituals and how do they work. So in terms of the bits that we've discussed, just to sort of try and summarise, because I'm conscious that I've again nicked everybody's time. Mm-hmm. So the fundamental premise still remains the same. We have... the Great North Road. We have the rituals that bind the liminal and fantastical world to the mundane. The way that the campaign develops will be based on there being a number of parties with a vested interest. And Martin, you were going to look at FCMC, what their ethos is, why they're doing what they're doing. We have the Fey world and everything else, which is kind of set out as it needs to be anyway. But then what we've got is the piece that I think Nook and Ralph, you were going to look at, which is, okay, what happens if they either shut down the rituals and don't do them, they actually reinforce the rituals, or alternatively, they break everything apart and do something completely different. And then mechanically, how that would work progressing along the Great North Road, what sort of consequences that might have, which I think would be interesting.
I mean, I've had a thought. Could we throw something else in at this stage? I know, dangerous. Could we be given a limited Royal Mint, produce a limited number of coins? So, because I was thinking like antique sovereigns or something, but basically have to be something specially minted with the current ruler's head, and the fact we've just had a succession to the throne, I really like as a kicking off point for a little adventure. So it could be a specially minted sovereign coin, and you have a limited supply of them, which is the resource we're talking about. And that is basically you have to pay. So part of the ritual would be to give to either bury it at certain points or to pay the fey or to leave... put coins on a corpse for the ferryman or something along those lines. These kind of like tropey mythical points. But this is your...
It's almost like paying a toll, isn't it?
Yeah, it is exactly paying a toll. So you have these points you have to get, and then you can pay additional ones to get out of trouble, to reverse time, to like speed up your passage, and you can earn them by doing other things as well elsewhere. But there'll be previous iterations, so it'll be like Queen Elizabeth's or Queen Victoria's or King George's face on the coin.
You could end up playing cards for them.
Yeah. Well, that could be a random encounter you could put in anywhere, couldn't it? Card shop.
We have them stolen.
I like it. But I don't know, we should vote on it, shouldn't we? We haven't voted on anything yet. We should vote on something.
No, I was going to do some sort of fatuous vote. Right, who gets voted out of the house? Yeah. Okay, well, let's
Dave. Let's all vote Dave out of the house.
Oh,
No, then
are you running this then, Bob Larson, if you won the podcast?
Okay, okay. So the vote is a simple a yes or a no. Do we have the underpinning to the rituals is this royal minted coin?
Yes. So, you can't vote for it then, can
yes.
I? Yes. Yeah, well, it looks like everybody's voting yes. So,
fantastic.
Motion carried.
Yeah. So chocolate money it is then.
Which is brilliant. What we can also do, obviously, is then get those made, can't we? So we could physically have them round the table.
If we're kickstarting this, this is clearly something that's, you know,
it's a stretch goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actual royal minted gold bars.
Steady on. Could we have forgeries in it somewhere as well?
Say again, sorry?
Forgeries.
Oh well, maybe that might be an FCMC type thing, might it? Yeah.
That might land someone in prison, surely. If you're offering actual physical rewards from the Kickstarter.
Yeah. I mean, I agree.
I'll vote against the physical reward of forged.
No. Okay. It was a stupid idea, but that's okay. Right. So we got those going back to what we were talking about, please. We're not adding anything else in. So it's the consequences of either failure or upholding the various rituals, making sure the whole thing goes swimmingly. What happens if that doesn't happen? That was down to Nook and Ralph to have a look at and to discuss. I do like the idea, and I thought it was one phrase that I would take this. Every episode has to be on a knife edge. There has to be, you know, some sort of jeopardy in there. You know, it needs to feel like there's jeopardy. I think that was a good. You know, you can swing it one way or the other, which I did like that, and also like the idea of, I think Martin, you were talking about, you know, the factions mechanics. You know how they, yeah. Or was it your point about the Rune Lords? I think it was Rise of the Rune Lords, wasn't it, Nook? Which was about, you know, which faction is now moving ahead, which one's benefited, you know, and. Is there a consequence? So I guess that comes into it, which is great. We've got the piece about, again, just developing that a little bit on which faction who have skin in the game, how can they help or hinder each opportunity, which is good. And then we talked about, we won't necessarily interfere with the party composition, but each of those party members has either some sort of leverage over them or a geas, whatever we want to call it. And then something that from that might then drive a slightly different agenda,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make it a little bit more sort of that that concept of, again, there's a bit of within the party, there's a little bit of jeopardy. But we need to avoid it being, you know, that, player versus player conflict, which I don't think helps at all, does it?
I can think you can see fun things of character-specific subplots, you know, putting in scenes into individual adventures where it's involving a particular character's, you know, gambling debts, say, in certain direction.
I do like the idea of having pissed off somebody within the fail. And you know, that could be quite an interesting way of FCMC trying to jeopardize, you know, certainly one of the scenarios. Anyway, we would then also include the adventure story seeds, which were the other elements that came out of each of the episodes, which I think is also right. And then we were going to look in a bit more detail, Martin, which was your piece, about having a look at FCMC and Arthur D.
Mm-hmm.
How do they progress? What's in it for them? Because they are the protagonist, and they are Nia Lathotep, aren't they, really? In the background, you know,
or are they? They could be the ones you want, yeah.
Or are they?
Yeah.
Are they in fact Basil Brush or an Aspidistria? And I think the final bit was your point, which is really good, which is what are those beats? You know, what things do we have to do to keep the momentum going? Which is good. So I wonder whether that's something that we can work out maybe between us, Martin, you and I, to have a think about the beats. Okay, fantastic, gentlemen.
Cool,
brilliant.
Brilliant.
It's all going
it's all going horribly wrong again.
I've got to plan to come together.
That's good. It's quite interesting when I've sort of gone back to people and said, listen, come on, would you be involved in this? And I've had two or three people who are, I would have said, sort of almost shining lights, really. They're sort of saying, well, I'm a bit intimidated by how creative everybody is. I think it's fantastic. I think there's been some incredible stuff that's come out. This could be really, it will be. It will be really, really good fun, this, I'm sure. So, good. Listen, gents, again, thank you ever so much. I really do appreciate it. And I'll try and get this episode out as quickly as I can.
Fantastic. Excellent.
Fantastic. Great.
A pleasure, James. Good.
Seems to die.